Hello to you. 866-391-1020. 866-391-1020. Not going to jinx it, Margo, but we're flying along today. Margo just punched the computer now that I said that. It's like a no-hitter. When it's going, you don't go, oh, she's rolling her eyes at me now. I'll talk to you in just a little bit. We've got a lot to catch up on. We didn't really catch up all that much yesterday because I was afraid you were tired and I didn't want you to get mad at me. So there was that. I didn't catch up with you on your trip, which I want to talk to you about maybe a little bit later. Anyway, oh, are we talking, Margo? And stay on hold if you're there. I'll grab your calls in a minute. Are we talking to the young woman from First Take, Fada? Are we talking to her later on this hour or no?
Yes, we should be.
Okay, so you reached out to her?
Yep.
All right, perfect. Good stuff. So we're teasing that right there with that conversation. Listen for The Drive at 5. The story's driving the news every single day at 5. It's all brought to you by Service Master Greater Pittsburgh. Demand the yellow van. Stan's in Cannonsburg. Hi, Stan.
Hey, Colin. Hey, that McAfee stuff, it's just garbage cancer culture. Put it in a drawer, close it up. Those people are idiots. Now, to get back to the Antonio Brown stuff, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of people coming up that, you know, getting inducted. You know, Roethlisberger's going to be coming up, Adrian Peterson. There's a lot of controversy in their backgrounds if they're going to put Antonio Brown on that, you know, the hot seat. A lot of, those things are going to come out, you know, after they get inducted. So I think Peterson's getting in and Roethlisberger's getting in. You know what I mean? So I don't know, man. You know what I mean? You got to put them in, I think.
Yeah, I definitely think you got to put them in. I think that's the way to go, undeniably. But I'm not going to argue if people say that character should be part of it. I'm not invested enough to care that much. That's probably part of it too. But from a topic to talk about, like, I'm not going to pound the table for it because I've been to Canton. It's cool. It's actually really cool. And I suggest going there if you're any kind of sports fan, especially in a pro football fan. But if they don't leave them in, or if they don't let them in, or if they leave them out, it's not going to make or break my day or my life, or it's not something that I need to champion. But if I had my druthers, he'd be in because it's about what he did on the football field. All right, let's talk about these mortgages. So this has struck me as interesting. So most U.S. homebuyers take out either 30 or 15-year mortgage, right? But what if you could take out a 50-year mortgage? You see all this stuff that's happened over the past couple days. And same with a car loan. People maybe taking out 15-year car loans. Is this financial responsibility or is this the height of financial irresponsibility? And we're selling something to people to have them bring down their immediacy, but really grow the long term. And it's doing the exact opposite of what we're trying to do as a society. This seems like a plan gone really bad. Now, your finances are your finances. I don't need to be in them. I don't. Not my thing, not my deal. You're responsible for you. I'm responsible for me. But let's just look at 84 months to start. That's 7 years on a car. So people were doing studies. So stretching out a car loan can lower the monthly payment, of course, but it raises the total amount of interest you'll pay. Of course. Come on. If you don't know that, then maybe you shouldn't be buying a car. So take for a $50,000 new car, 10% down, current average percent rate of 7%. For 48 months, that'd be a payment of $1,078, $6,700 in total interest. 60 months, $891 payment, $8,463 in total interest. Now, let's take somebody that does a seven-year note on a car. They look at that, and I think this is where maybe some people, especially younger, go, oh, this is great, as opposed to $1,000 a month, which it would be for 48 months. Let's say you go 84 months, 7 years, right? $679 a month, which they go, oh, it's $679. That's great. But it's $12,000 in interest. An 84-month loan term ends up costing $5,300 more than the 48-month option. This is where we try to teach people financial responsibility, both in mortgages, car payments, things like this. And whoever's pushing these very long-term loan terms are looking at this and saying, oh, let's get our money up front. Let's go. Have as many people sign up as possible. And I wonder if they truly care about the back end and how many people, one, they're going to bankrupt, two, they're going to put into bankruptcy, and they're just going to jam up financially. It seems like people don't care. And I get it. They're not in the business of caring. But how many people even have a cursory understanding of all of this? Or do they just look at the short term, look at the lower number, and go, sign me up, not realizing they're going to pay for a car, and sometimes longer than that car is going to last them. They're not even going to have it anymore. They're going to try to get the value out of reselling it, and it's going to deplete a ton. Jim's in the car. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Colin. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Good. So here's the bottom line on this. As far as the 50-year mortgages, this is like the subprime crisis in a different form. In the case where you have a 50-year mortgage, you know, even at a moderately priced home, you are going to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars extra in interest over the term of that loan, and that's not hyperbole.
Right.
That
they might as well.
Just a true fact.
They might as well just call Lehman Brothers or Washington Mutual for their note on their house if they're going to do this, or Countrywide Financial or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I worked for a firm that did what they called a pick-a-pay, and it was a disaster. And then, of course, with the cars, like you just mentioned, you know, you're going to be horribly underwater when you sell that car, because you're building equity on that car so slowly that you're going to be upside down in a matter of, you know, instantly, really. On a new car, you're going to be upside down. But the mortgages, that is a horribly bad idea. Horribly bad. I remember Washington Mutual did the 40-year loan.
Right.
And that was bad enough. And that would not work. And the lure of a lower monthly payment, you know, seems like something that's palatable in the beginning. But when you add it all up, when you look at your truth in lending disclosure, you're going to faint.
I couldn't agree more. A case in point, I often tout our school district that we live in, Hampton, because I think it's spectacular. I think it's great. I love it. There's just one thing I wish they'd fix. I wish they'd get more armed security. But other than that, I think I wouldn't want my kids to go anywhere else. The people have been incredible, and I love the curriculum. I do. One thing they do that my wife and I volunteer for every year, we have the past couple years. She'll continue to do it. My shift doesn't really allow me all that much. They have at the middle school level, eighth grade, and it's one of their finance classes or some kind of class. You go and these kids all come in and they have a budget and they go around the room and there's a booth for housing. There's a booth for your car. There's a booth for what you eat. There's all the expenditures you have in your life, okay? And the adults that volunteer, there's probably 10 or 12 of us, we sit at those booths and give them options. Okay, if you want to live in an apartment, it costs this much. You want to live in a two-bedroom house, it costs this much. You want to live on a houseboat, heck, who knows, it costs this much. And so they have this sheet and they figure it all out, and it's a financial responsibilities day. And people come in from the bank, too, and volunteer for this. And it really opens the eyes of these eighth graders when they go, wait a minute, so I'm spending this much on a apartment that's in a real nice part of town. That means I can't have that really nice car and I got to buy a used one. And a light bulb goes off. And to see that is really rewarding when kids have to apply in real life that budget. That needs to be regular curriculum in all schools. Early. I'm talking third, fourth, fifth grade, so that they can get an understanding that lower payment right away might not be the best thing when the back end is going to just absolutely smash you. 866-391-1020 is that number. That's 866-391-1020. Here we go. Woo! I'm in a great mood today. We'll talk to our friend from Next Take, Fada. She's a student at Pitt. We'll talk to her briefly in the next segment. 866-391-1020. I do want to get back into the Epstein emails at the top of the next hour. Man, there's a ton to get into today. Michelle's in Beaver County. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Hey, I just wanted to tell you, there's this awesome post, and this is a life lesson, that says that this kid's playing Monopoly with his parents, and he starts crying over paying taxes. And I'm thinking, buddy, you're 8 years old. Get ready.
Yeah, hopefully he lives out by you in Beaver County and not Allegheny County.
Preach, my man, preach.
Huh.
But it's so awesome that he's 8 years old crying over taxes. I was like, you get ready, Buster.
Yeah, Buster. You better be ready. Uncle Sam wants his, or Sarah Inamorato in this case. But yeah, no, you're right about that. It is something that's practical and something that works and something that that I think when you teach financial responsibility earlier, even if it is a hard lesson for kids, then they get an understanding of it. They just do. Now, where is this story that... Oh, this is the story I want to talk about briefly, and it's this.
Patrick Huth, a physics and astronomy professor at CCAC, says the sun has released several bursts of energy called coronal mass ejections, two of which have already reached Earth.
These particles arrive with so much energy that they collide with the atoms in the upper atmosphere of Earth, and the atmosphere absorbs that energy and then releases it as visible light that we can see.
For anyone hoping to see the auras, who says the colors may be hard to catch?
Get out your cell phone camera, because the sensitivity of the cameras are a little bit better than our eyes.
He adds there's no danger to anyone, though strong solar storms can disrupt GPS, power grids, and other technologies. Tamira Rush, News Radio KDKA.
Why, thank you, Tamira. Now, am I alone in this? I'm 48 years old. It feels like in the first 47 years of my life, I might be wrong, but it feels like we were able to see the Northern Lights like three times in the first 47 years of my life. And in the last year of my life, it feels like we were able to see the Northern Lights like five times. Again, I might be totally wrong in that. Maybe I've just started paying attention now or whatever. But it felt like this phenomenon that never came to Western Pennsylvania. And now it's like once a month. You look on social media and they're like, look to the north. Check it out. It's like we live in Norway or Finland or something. You can see them. And I'm like, huh? The Northern Lights. Doesn't that happen once every... It's like Halley's Comet or whatever. No, happens like once a month now. When did this... Why? How? I could see it on the horizon last night. Way, toward the north, oddly. But yes, you definitely could see that purplish, kind of deep reddish maroon hue. And it's something interesting. But I never remember this happening with this regularity in the past. It is. It's something to, something pretty neat, actually. All right, we'll talk to our friend Fada from Pitt. Next Take. I catch that show in the mornings sometimes, very early in the mornings when I'm up. There is a lot going on in our hometown this weekend. I'm just trying to make it to the weekend. That'd be fantastic. I got a bunch to do this weekend, too. Anyway, Next Take. You can check it out overnight into the early morning. Let me welcome in, as we do for a couple minutes this time every week, our friend from Pitt, Fada Hindawi. She's a part of the Next Take family, as Margo formerly was. And now Margo's making big moves here at the radio station. Hi, Fada. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for asking. I want to ask you this, because I have not talked to anybody kind of in this realm. Has the government shutdown impacted college students at all? And if so, how?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the only way I can put it shortly. Yeah, I personally know a lot of students who are on SNAP benefits, and it's absolutely terrible, and they have no idea what to do. They're using the Pitt pantry, or they're eating at their friend's house. It's devastating to look at, but in terms of the more educational scale, a lot of research projects I know have been, I mean, earlier this year, it was defunded because of Trump's cuts to the NSF, but now we're in this stage where, like, nobody's starting anything. We're just continuing the projects that, continuing research projects that we know are going to be successful. And there isn't a lot of room. I personally feel like that. I'm not so sure about the University of Pittsburgh. If you did ask me this question a couple of months ago, I would say that the number of PhD students that they're admitting per year is decreasing tremendously. I heard that the math department only accepted, 10 PhD students compared to 20. And it was crazy. But yes, the government shut down. Everybody's really worried about it. I did hear in the news that they were supposed to be delegating and talking about it today at 4 p.m. in Congress. I don't know about if you've heard of it.
Yeah. Wait, so I do want to backtrack. I want to go back for a second then. So then you're telling me that you know people, and this is fascinating to me then. You know people who are in college, who are either in undergrad or graduate level classes, that are on SNAP benefits. So essentially, their disposable income or any money that they have is essentially going to pay for their education first, and then they're going to figure out how they can eat afterwards. Is that summing it up correctly?
A little bit. I am giving an example of a friend I made last year. She was in her senior year and she was still paying for school, like full tuition, but she was on SNAP benefits, even though she had her own apartment and everything. So I do think that maybe it's going towards tuition first and then food. And it's unfortunate and it's awful to hear about.
No, it is. It really is. It's tough times. Fadha Hindawi, she joins part of our Next Take crew. So how then would you describe everything in terms of, again, and you're the outreach and kind of the example that I have and the person that I talk to that's in that age bracket. Are things then tenuous or things day by day? Like what is the atmosphere then in and around campus monetarily and money-wise? And are people free and loose with their money, or are kids a lot, I don't want to say kids, but are young adults a lot more careful with their money?
I am not going to generalize an entire college population. Of course, I do know people that spend like their life depends on it.
Uh-huh.
I'm clearly like, aren't you freaking out that the federal government is on pause and nobody's getting paid? But then I talk to the Next Take gang like every single day at this point, and we're all freaking out. We're all like, this was supposed to happen a couple of weeks ago at this point. Why are they still arguing? I know that I don't know personally anybody who's on the ACA acts, which is the American, it's those healthcare subsidies,
right?
That they're currently debating about. And that's pretty much the thing in house that's like really pushing the Democrats' gears, because Republicans want to completely shut it down, but Democrats want to keep it. That thing, in terms of Next Take, when we talk about it, it seems like the most logical thing is to fund for healthcare. But yeah, I think it's just because I've been talking to Next Take this entire time that I don't know how to assess other people, because you see a bunch of them around here. You see students who don't care about this, who don't even know that we're still in a shutdown, surprisingly. So yeah, I'm so sorry I couldn't give you a definitive
answer. No. That's fine. Then last thing for you, do you then look at people in terms of job prospects in the job market, and do they see prospects as hopeful? Do they see prospects as, plentiful? Are they down? How are people that are your contemporaries, how do they look at their future, their immediate future and their long-term future?
Their immediate future is that right now, nobody's applying for a federal job. Whether it's in politics, whether it's an internship, me personally looking for summer internships, the websites are down.
Yeah, you don't even, right, it's not even worth clicking on it, right?
Yeah, actually, surprisingly, I was talking to someone older than me, and he was able to get an internship with the federal government. So I told him, hey, could you help me around? There's a shutdown and nothing's really working. He's like, I only applied to federal internships. You're going to have to find something else. Recent graduates, I think at this point, they're not just going to the private sector. Nobody is thinking of getting a government job, at least from who I know, whether it's in economics, whether it's in math, whether it's in political science, or even in media, which I assume that nobody is going towards. But I mean, nobody is applying federally for any sort of media jobs. But it's just, yeah, nobody wants to deal with the federal government right now because it's just so unstable.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I appreciate it. Appreciate the time today. And it's something to think about. Thank you, Fada. Appreciate it as always. Wow. Sure. That's fascinating to me. It's also good planning from college young people's part in looking at it and say, okay, we're kind of going to lop off one whole sector of our potential job search. But the first part of what she said has me intrigued about tax dollars going to college students to potentially give them SNAP benefits. Not give them, but if they rightly earn them, go there. You know, one would think there has to be a better way. And if it is a sad state of affairs, if somebody does in fact have to choose between, especially if they're deep in their education, well, I got one or two semesters left. Do I ride this out and try to allocate all my money toward that and maybe skimp on, well, my stomach and not eating? Or do I put my education on hold? Like, that's a real tough life lesson that you have to be faced with at a pretty young age. And it just, man, the cost of education, something needs to be done. The cost of education is absurd with so many of these schools. It just is. But if they have willing participants and people who are ready to pay, and I just read a story today how enrollments are bouncing back at so many schools, how they're on an uptick again at so many schools. If people are willing to pay and pay the full freight, then who am I or anybody else to say, well, they're doing it wrong? But it's fascinating stuff from Fada. It was. All right, totally shifting gears. Coming up next, before we get into these Epstein emails and more heavy things, but totally shifting gears up next. If a beer's like this, I don't want one. I mean it. There's a fascinating story about beer that we must talk about coming up in just a couple minutes. Here we go. All right. So, I if you're on hold, stay there. I'll grab your call in due time. But, you know, I troll the wire for different stories, both in this country, internationally, all over the place. It's sometimes quirky, sometimes serious. We get sound from a bunch of different places. This one caught me, and it left me wondering, who really is the audience for this? I mean, who is? I don't get it. So I don't drink anymore. Not wine, not beer, not hard stuff. I can still taste. If I smell Rumplemints, I still remember vomiting. So stay away from the Rumplemints. Same thing with Goldschlager, kids. Stay away from that unless you know what you're doing. Leave that to the pros. Anyhow, I heard this story about beer. Or so they say, beer. Give a listen to this.
Samuel Adams is out with a new beer that's 30% ABV.
Beer.
It's called Utopias 2025, and it's illegal to sell in 15 states. The company says it gets its high alcohol content through an extended fermentation process that includes specialized yeast strains. You're not supposed to chug a Utopias like it's a typical pint of beer either. It's meant to be sipped like a fine spirit, not only because it'll get you drunk fast, but it's expensive too, at $240 per 24.5-ounce bottle. Stacy Lynn, CBS News.
All right. First of all, the price point's ridiculous. Second of all, 30% ABV. Now, there's no way drinking that could be enjoyable. There's no way it can taste good. I don't care how you soup it up, what you do, how you brew it, ferment it, this, that, whatever. Once you start to get into that 12, 13 range, beer doesn't really taste all that much like beer anymore. You get into those Trappist beers and all that, Le Fin du Monde and all that kind of stuff. Once you start to get past double digits, you start to kind of taste a hint of alcohol. And I'm not this beer connoisseur like some people are, but I've dabbled in some of the expensive beer here and there. There is no way in the world drinking a beer that is 30% ABV or whatever, it gives the taste of beer. It can't. You might as well just find grain alcohol. That'll get you to the same place a lot faster and just have a couple shots of it. Go find some 151 or whatever and just eliminate the middleman and get there quicker. You make the decision you want. That just sounds like the dumbest thing I've ever heard. 30% ABV. You never walk away from a sip of it and go, oh, that's really good. Man, that tastes good. It's an impossibility. So before you waste your money on that, take it from me. It's not going to taste good in the least. Anyway, 866-391-1020. I'll grab your calls on the other side. And also, got to get back into these Epstein emails now that they're out. The Bocce House of Pittsburgh, get there. It's officially open. How do I know? I was there. It was great. It was fantastic. Was there with a bunch of friends last week. And it is fun. So, Luxury Cigar Lounge, fantastic. League play, all levels, get there. Self-pour bar system. You see these people. You walk up, pour it yourself, get a glass of wine. Man, is it something. And the food? I had pizza there that was fantastic. I'm not just saying that. It was fantastic. You're treated like a king there. Or a queen, depending on, you know, who you are. The hospitality is first class. Bocce House of Pittsburgh and Fox Chapel, great food, great drinks, even better company. All meet on the bocce court. Take a look at all the photos and the things going on, thebocciehouse.com for all the details.